Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
What is the best solution for the Mariners' offensive woes? Now, we've talked about time being one potential possibility, right? We had Mike Salk on at 11:30 who said, look, some rebuilds, they're not linear. Rebuilds can be messy, but either way, if you've got real talent there, you have a reason to be excited. And the Mariners, universally, people have agreed, have real talent there, have real talent to be excited about. So that's one argument you could look at. You could also look at the idea that we explored with Tim Kirkjian at noon of ESPN, the idea that offenses around the league are just down, that they're not as great as they used to be because pitching is just becoming unhittable. Pitchers are becoming so dang good that the strikeout rate is higher than it's ever been before. And each year for the last 15 years, you've broken the previous year's record. Either way, you're dealing with a problem. When you look at the Mariners as a whole, outside of just the struggles the rest of the league is having, they are especially bad. Team average, 198. That's not good. They're last in on-base percentage, 26th in slugging. Also important to note, 273 hits as a team, which is second worst, to 413 strikeouts. Think of the difference there. 413 strikeouts and 273 hits. So it's not weird to have more strikeouts than hits per se, especially in today's MLB.
Right.
But that's quite a difference. And so they're also dealing with a number of injuries. Evan White, Ty France, and now Dylan Moore on the 10-day IL. You got to turn things around somewhere, Jake.
You do, and you also look at a different stat as well. You talk about their on-base percentage versus their walk rate. I mean, you know, our own boy Howdy, he tweets out, the Mariners are 12th in baseball in walks drawn and dead last in on-base percentage. Think about that. I mean, that is bad. That is how little they are hitting. And so when you talk about that, it is incredibly frustrating, but at the same time, as we're seeing this pitcher evolution really happen before our eyes, and we're seeing pitchers be so incredibly dominant, and you're seeing this, you know, this really this unbalance here between pitching and hitting, or the styles in which, you know, hitters are approaching the game, it's not really a surprise when you look at the guys that are on the Mariners lineup right now as to where they're at and why they're struggling, and the fact that they are hitting so poorly right now. And you know, you got Jerry DePoto here in cut number four talking about how with young guys, like, unfortunately it just takes time.
The young ones take a little bit of time. Some will hit the ground running and never look back. Some, like Taylor Trammell, they get a reset in AAA and hopefully it does the trick. But I've said before in a different way, player development isn't always linear, and we're finding that out in a way that is just as painful as the injuries we're dealing with. So it's not been a fun period to watch our offense, but it will turn. We are going to start scoring some more.
Well, that would be great to know when that's going to happen, right? We would all like to know when that's going to happen, when that turn will indeed happen, but ultimately, you also go to cut number five here, and Jerry DePoto is talking about, yeah, young players, eventually it'll take their turn. It's not easy, hard to watch, but it's important right now, the at-bats that they're getting.
From the position of assessors or, you know, evaluating what we're doing, we try to take a 24-by-24 view, focusing on the 24 hours, but remembering what's important that comes over the next 24 months. And you know, when you're developing these young players, it's important to remember that for men, that this is preaching patience, so to speak. But for most of these young players, the assimilation to the big leagues is going to take somewhere between 300 and 1,000 plate appearances. And we are just starting. We just pushed away from the dock in that.
Yeah, not to illustrate how they're just starting, Luke Arkins has a tweet out there about the lineup right now that is currently being put out there and the plate appearances that they have. Kyle Seager has close to 6,000. He's at, you know, 5,700 right now. Mitch Haniger has 1,600. J.P. Crawford has over 1,000. And everybody else, the next highest, is Tom Murphy at 571.
Yeah, it's not even that it's close. It's like the next closest is half
it's,
of that.
It's insane. So there's no shock or no surprise when you look at that, you know, those plate appearances, that they are going to struggle. That, as we've said before, the peaks and valleys are going to be, you know, stark. And so it's going to lend itself to some really tough moments this season. But overall, can we be patient enough through this rebuilding process? I think Mariners fans can and will be, but to a degree, right?
Yeah.
I mean, to a degree, we can have perspective in this situation, and it just becomes frustrating when you chose pain. Mariners chose pain, instead of going out and, as we talked about before, getting stopgap players. There's no reason why you need to go through this process at the catcher position, at the second base position, right? There really isn't a need for that right now, because the guys that are next in line or ready to go, they're not necessarily, their time frame isn't necessarily right now.
Yeah, that's a big part of the problem to me. The problem to me is you've got two things that are coming to a head. One is a lot of what Jerry DePoto is saying is objectively true. Like, it's hard to argue with him. The more plate appearances you have, the more experience you're going to get. That is just a fact. And that's going to vary, right? More appearances for Dylan Moore, and I don't mean this as a slight to Dylan Moore, may not make him the player that Jared Kelnick can be with more appearances. So there's obviously limits to what that can do in itself. A random dude showing up to a plate 1,000 times isn't going to become Mike Trout. But that said, the Mariners are a very inexperienced squad. And this front office is correct to assume that more appearances will at least help, will at least inch them forward and make them better. The problem is, you're telling Mariners fans in particular, something that's objectively true. And that comes to a head with fans, a lot of fans, having very little trust in your organization. So what do you do with it, right? I mean, there are a lot of fans that are saying, what you're saying is true, but I also, like, I want to believe the team can be better and this team can go somewhere, but I've been burned for 20 years. What do I do with that? What do I do with that feeling? And so
right.
I am not surprised to see people, including at times myself, that know about baseball, that listen to this, that believe in the rationality of what Jerry DePoto says and Scott Servais says, and think, yes, these are good people who do their jobs well, who know what they're talking about, and at the same time think, well, gosh, you could have made this so much easier on yourself. Or, gosh, do I trust that you're going to spend next offseason? Gosh, do I trust that if Jared Kelnick comes up, you're going to do everything you can to keep him here? I don't. That's not the fault of DePoto. That's not the fault of Servais. That's certainly not the fault of these players who clearly, by their plate appearances, a lot of them have just gotten here. The problem is you've got 20 years of history you're competing against and a deep-rooted mistrust at times for a lot of Mariners fans who want nothing more than a winning team. Who want
Absolutely.
Nothing more. Just that. Just a winning team.
Right. And I also remember those days. I mean, the Mariners, they tweeted out a video of Ricky Henderson, his first at-bat in the Mariners uniform. He goes yard. I remember that moment vividly. Like, high fives, fist bumps, you know, yelling in the house, having fun, and going to the ballpark. And you go and watch that video, look how packed Safeco Field was at the time, right? Could you imagine T-Mobile Park being like that? I mean,
everyone
that's what
wants
this,
the same thing.
Yes, we all
everyone
want the same,
wants
thing,
the same
and,
thing,
and we're all craved for that, and we're craving for that. But I think that when you go through this process, you know, one of the texters on the Mac and Jack text line said, you know, or posed the question, would it be better or easier if Jerry DePoto or Scott Servais said that, hey, it's more like 2023, more like 2024 in the process right now? Do you think that would be better for them, for fans to be able to take this all in? Because I don't think that would necessarily be the best thing moving forward. And I don't think that Jerry DePoto and Scott Servais necessarily agree with that timeline. Maybe when every wave of their farm system currently will be up with the big league club. But I think that they can be a much more competitive team in 2022.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I need to see you wouldn't be in this place had you, like you said, you wouldn't be in this place had you gone out and just gotten like one free agent to help you. Just one. Like, you don't even have to spend. You didn't have to spend a ton of money. Just get like a decent dude in here. And you didn't. Like, what did you need to see? More importantly, what did you think you would see this year that would make you think, okay, now I can definitely spend? You're going to need to spend no matter what.
Right, right. And I think that you did see Dylan Moore have a very strong year during the 60 games, and it got you thinking, well, maybe we can get by with Dylan Moore and experiment him at second base and see how that works. Well, problem is you see the thinking in that. There's nowhere to hide for David Moore. So when he struggles at the plate, there's no one to move him into that spot and give him a breather and give him a chance to re-go at it again in this lineup. There's nowhere to hide for all these young, inexperienced players. And I think that's the ultimate struggle that you're witnessing right now. And the only choice that you have in the Mariners organization is to either call up guys, right? Or it is to let them work through it, and it's to let them try and figure it out on their own. And right now, that's the spot that they're in, the latter, not the former.
We also had Jerry DiPoto again on with Danny Engelhardt this morning, who answered questions about Logan Gilbert, who just had his second start. Wasn't stellar by any means, but here's what DiPoto had to say about what he saw.
And Logan's just throwing too many pitches or catching too much plate. And I don't think he's had enough feel for his secondary pitches. In these two games, it took him a little while in his first start to work into his breaking ball. And yesterday, I felt like he could never find it. But that's going to be the key for him, is getting his secondaries in the strike zone and getting them off of his fastball. And his fastball is best when it's located or elevated, and we're not really seeing that.
DJ, not to peel back the curtain and put you on blast, but both you and Brandon Gustafson on with us the other day in our big text thread, we're mentioning this about what you were seeing from Logan.
Well, yeah, and Brandon, I've heard a lot of this from Brandon, who did pitch in college and, you know, his whole life. And you read all these scouting reports about Logan Gilbert, you know, and we've had Jonathan Mayo on say he has 4+ pitches, but his fastball is so good because it has so much life. It's kind of a running fastball, not just like a two seamer, but it kind of moves a little bit like a cutter. Right now, we're not seeing that. His fastball, yeah, like DiPoto said, it's catching a lot of the plate. It's moving in a very straight line, and he's just locating it just in the upper part of the zone. And I think it's something he's going to figure out. He's only 24, you know, or 25. Like, he's going to figure it out. But it is a little worrisome to see the opposite of the scouting report. Like, yes, his fastball has a lot of life, and now he's out of velocity to it, but now it's lost a little bit of that life.
Love DJ at 25. He's only 25. His whole world's ahead of him. what a time.
Oh, Stacey, if you could only be that age, okay. And the advice that you would give.
Okay,
oh.
Okay. It is 1:15. That means it's time for NFL headlines. The NFL.com also published an article projecting the top 10 offenses in the NFL in 2021. Guess where the Seahawks are listed? Oh, they didn't make the list. In order from 10 to 1, so going from not worst to first, but from 10th to first, the best offense, Titans, Cardinals, Vikings, Browns, Falcons, Bills, Cowboys, and then top three, no surprise, you shouldn't be surprised at all. Packers, last year's highest scoring offense, Chiefs, last year's Super Bowl team, Buccaneers, last year's Super Bowl winner. 3-2-1.
Yeah, I am surprised to see the Atlanta Falcons on there. I really am. I guess it all is dependent on whether Julio Jones is still there as a Falcon or not. They have the weaponry to be really, really special, but the truth is that is that actually going to mean something? Is that actually going to matter? Are they going to be a team that they have been over the last, you know, 3 to 3 years in particular, where it has been more about them producing offense because they're behind, because they're down in every single game? So I think that's one of those questions, but I do think that the Seahawks being left out of the top 10, I get, because you struggled in the second half of the season. Yeah, they were brutal, but I do believe that they will be significantly better, and they will be a top 10 offense.
That's the thing. I completely understand the point of view of this. You want to be a top 10 offense? Play like one. You didn't. You completely fell off in the second half of the season and at times looked atrocious compared to the talent you had. It made zero sense whatsoever. You had Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, Chris Carson when he was healthy. You had Russell Wilson, Dwayne Brown. I mean, you had great players on offense. Couldn't get it together. It made no sense. Hopefully they figured that out, and hopefully bringing in Shane Waldron is a big part of that and getting your offensive line a little bit healthier. But until you see it play out, I don't think you can put them safely in the top 10, particularly if you aren't here day to day the way that all of us are and everyone listening, seeing those developments from the offense and knowing what the potential of these guys are. When you're local, you get it and you understand what they can be. Outside of Seattle, I completely understand why they looked at a couple of these other teams and said they've got a better shot. All right. In a story that Jake loves hearing, Tim Tebow officially signed with the Jaguars as a tight end. Jake, how excited are you going to be to see Tim Tebow get his first career touchdown?
It's not going to happen, Stacey. I don't think that Tim Tebow is going to be making the team. But look, I had my frustrations with it in terms of I think that there are other young, capable guys that are looking for their shot that have been working extremely hard to get that, that play the tight end position. I think there's diamonds in the rough always that deserve that opportunity. But Tim Tebow is going to the one place that, guess what, Stacey? It's the one place that he could get this opportunity with Urban Meyer. And, you know, at the end of it all, Tim Tebow, we're going to find out if he can play the position or not, and most likely he will not be able to. But it will be a fun topic of conversation. It'll be something that the media keeps an eye on, not just Trevor Lawrence, but Tim Tebow and how he's doing at his experimental tight end tryout here. So we'll see how this goes.
The other day we talked about an NFL team making moves, hiring a woman as one of their senior NFL scouts. Well, the Bills have joined in that conversation as well. They have hired two women to head up as an offensive assistant and player personnel coordinator. And I think this is awesome. And I think it's important and an important story. And I know there's two comments people always have. One, I hope they're qualified. Well, I hope you say that for every single hire. And two, why does it matter that they're women? It matters because of representation. And I think that that's really awesome.
No, it is awesome. I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, how would it not be? Can you tell me how it wouldn't be?
Right. Someone's like, why would it? Why does it matter if they're a woman? Because there aren't many women in coaching ranks, and women struggle to break into male-dominated fields, and how cool is that? Also, by the way, I'm going to let you guys in on a secret. Don't tell anyone. There are a lot of people in football that have never played professional football. Just keep it between us, okay?
Very successful coaches that have never played football. So, yeah, I think it's awesome. If you have a passion for something and you go for it, I mean, it's really cool to see people, you know, no matter where their background is, be able to get chances and opportunities.
Absolutely. Peyton Manning says he hopes Aaron Rodgers stays in Green Bay. Quote, when I think of Aaron, I think of him as a Green Bay Packer. This is what Manning said to TMZ. Hopefully they can get it worked out. I look forward to seeing him play this year somewhere. And I love that he adds somewhere at the end of it. I love that he's like, look, when I think of Aaron, I think of him as a Packer. I'm really excited for him to continue his career as a Packer or, you know, wherever. Like, that's basically what he says.
Yes, that it is very unclear. It's interesting also that Dan Graziano of ESPN on NFL Live had stated that he is hearing that Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers are having talks of a contract extension.
Oh, my.
So I really don't know what to make of this. I do believe that the Green Bay Packers are really, truly trying to make this work and trying to keep the relationship together. And they're trying to potentially throw money at Aaron Rodgers and say, look, we're showing our loyalty to you.
Yeah.
I know we draft. Hey, I know we, you know, broke your trust.
It meant nothing.
And we drafted a quarterback.
It meant nothing.
And to prove it, we're not going to trade the guy, but we're going to give you a fat contract extension. How about that, Aaron? Will that please you? I think that's where they're at right now. We'll see if it satisfies Aaron Rodgers and if they're able to come to an agreement or not. But, yeah, I'm with you. I think it's funny that Peyton Manning finishes that with, hopefully he plays somewhere.
Hedges his bets. Yeah. He's like, or anywhere. I had one off-season wish. One off-season wish, and it was to have Aaron Rodgers play in Denver. It's all I wanted. Why is that so complicated? It's just I want to see.
Please get Aaron Rodgers out of the NFC.
That'd be wonderful. Like I think he'd be a great AFC quarterback.
Yeah, he'd be great with the Broncos. You know what I believe that Manning at this point is like, hey, look, you know, there's Elway, there's Manning, there's not enough room for a third. Like Aaron needs to be in Green Bay. Like right now, I'm the man in Denver, and I don't want to give that up to Aaron Rodgers. So, you know, let's just encourage him to stay in Green Bay. Maybe that's the intention of Peyton Manning here. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so.
Tinfoil cap?
a little bit. I'm always ready to get that tinfoil cap on. You know me. I'm ready for it. All right, last story here. NFL.com lists the remaining offseason priorities for each team. They have their priority for the Seahawks. That priority, quote, keeping Russell Wilson smiling.
Okay. All right, that's strong words. Look, obviously for your franchise, to have your franchise quarterback positive, happy, excited about what's going on within your organization is always a good thing. We've seen this and we witnessed this offseason. When things are in turmoil, it's tough. It's really, really tough. And we'll see what this season looks like, what fruit it bears. But I do believe that, yeah, Russell Wilson should be a Seahawk. When it comes to what should happen, he should be a Seahawk for life. He shouldn't wear any other uniform. And hopefully that they are able to ensure that that happens, because I believe if this is a successful season offensively, they're able to get things going, that, you know, things go in the right direction, and the conversations that they've had, the friction points that they've had, get smoothed out and figured out. I do think that happens. I do think that Russell Wilson is a Seahawk for life. So I'm crossing my fingers for it, and I know that he's working at it.
I love the text line, Mac and Jack's text line, getting in on the Aaron Rodgers to the AFC push that we're making. Just people, I've always thought of him as a Bills quarterback. You know, I've always thought Aaron Rodgers to the Jets. I've always thought that would be a great fit. You know what I mean? And when I think Aaron Rodgers, I think Tennessee Titan. That's what I think.
Definitely. Definitely.
All right. We had an awesome interview with ESPN's Tim Kirkjian earlier, talking about the biggest problem in baseball. It might not be what you think. That's coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
What I need to know is coming your way in 15 minutes. You can get those questions in now, though. Mac and Jack's text line, 710-710. That question for what I need to know. You can send more than one. You got a lot of questions on your mind, a lot of things going on. Before we get to that, though, I'm going to call a little baby audible. Jake, you're familiar with that. I was going to talk about Tim Kirkjian.
Stacey, when you call an audible, you can't just say, I'm going to call a little baby audible. You got to call an audible.
Say it with, okay, well.
You got to say, check,
right,
check.
Okay, well, I'm calling an audible. If it's okay with you guys, I'm just going to call
an
audible.
Easy.
Thanks. Right. You know, I'm just. What I'm going to do is just tiptoe in and just be like, I'm an audible. Just going to suggest it.
There's 100,000 people. You got to say it loud.
Different approaches. Tim Kirkjian was on with us. We were going to talk about what he had to say. It was a fantastic interview. So I will tell you, it was a great interview. You can listen to it. It's kicking off hour two of today's podcast, Jake and Stacey Show. You can download it at 710sports.com. Just click on the podcast page and hit Jake and Stacey. Again, that's going to be at noon with Tim Kirkjian. Fantastic stuff. However, I think instead what I want to do is I want to talk about a conversation we had earlier, and I want to do a bit of a deeper dive. Jake, you said something so interesting when we were talking about the Seahawks feeling a little bit slighted. Hey, the Seahawks, universally by most critics, certainly by the latest ranking in Pro Football Focus, have the best quarterback in the division. That said, they are not Super Bowl favorites even within their division. The Rams and the 49ers more wagered on Super Bowl wins than they are. Now, you want to make a bet on like a team that's like a little more risky and exciting, so I get it. Like, I'm not surprised that the Seahawks aren't leading the group in Super Bowl betting, but I do think that there's some real kind of underlying idea there that the Seahawks are not as good. Certainly not the best team in the division, going to be really fighting for it. So what's the discrepancy? What's up with it? And Jake, you pointed to some sound that we listened to earlier, specifically from Sean O'Hara. And DJ, do we have that? Cut number one. Can you go ahead and play that?
You go back to, right, like the Legion of Boone days, and, you know, how was that team built? It was all built through the draft, and it was fifth-round picks and fourth-round picks and, you know, guys that were hungry and they're trying to prove their worth. And you just, I don't feel like Seattle has ever reloaded. And I think to your point, Shregs, offensively, they feel like the puppy who's lost their way, and their identity has completely changed. When Marshawn Lynch stepped out and removed himself from Seattle, they never seemed to get their groove back.
Jake, you said it feels like they're in between two places.
It does. And look, there is some truth to what Sean O'Hara is saying. No, they haven't been able to reload with the same crop of young type of talent, but that is so incredibly rare. So I don't necessarily blame them for not being able to do that. They have been able to put good competitive rosters together since the LOB has departed. You would love to see a little bit more impact level talent in some of the drafts that they have had since that point. But overall, the real reason why I think that people are doubting the Seahawks or that they're not the clear-cut favorite to win the division, even though they have obviously the best quarterback in the division, is the fact that their offensive identity, what is it, mm-hmm. right? And it has changed since Marshawn Lynch, and they have tried to go back and reestablish their running game, so much so that they have spent a ton of capital on trying to find the next guy. Find the next running back, right? They have tried to reincorporate that running game. That's ultimately why they brought in Brian Schottenheimer in 2018, 2019 to bring and establish that running game. But what happened? The league has changed. The league has expanded. The league has gotten faster. The league has been about scoring points. And Stacey, to your point, the playoffs, what we saw, the top teams in the playoffs, the teams that ended up furthering and advancing, they were top 10, top 5 in offense. They had great quarterback play, right? These were explosive offenses that were complemented by good defense.
Well, and importantly, the best defense won the Super Bowl.
Yes, but that they had offenses that were explosive, that put points on the board, that put stress on defenses. And I think that when you're looking at this offense, now they have to find their identity, their new identity. Not the identity in 2013 with Marshawn Lynch and the Legion of Boom, mm-hmm. the new identity. And that is why I think there has been friction at times within the organization. But I also believe that here in 2021, Pete Carroll, John Schneider, I think they're looking at this and saying, okay, there is some change that we need to make. We're gonna let go of Brian Schottenheimer and we're gonna go with Shane Waldron. We are gonna draft D. Eskridge in the second round because of his speed and how much that can make an impact to our offense and how difficult that can be to defend when you incorporate him in with DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. I think that there has been a shift and change in conversation and shift and change in thought process to this offense. But ultimately, the success of this team is going to be hinged upon the successful implementation of this new Seahawks offensive identity. To me, it is going to be about that. This defense is going to be good, and hopefully it can complement, but it's ultimately going to be about this offense.
Yeah, you're going to need a good defense to win a Super Bowl. If you've got a bad defense, unless you are absolutely elite on offense, and people point to Kansas City too often with this. Kansas City wasn't that bad on defense when they won the Super Bowl. They were elite on offense. They were decent on defense. I think they might have led the league or been near the top of the league in sacks, if I'm remembering correctly. I mean, they weren't awful. They just weren't nearly as consistent or good. You still need to be good on defense. And if you're Tampa Bay, the good news is you know who you are offensively. And then you also happen to get some really solid draft picks on defense. And that might be almost more of a key between those four championship teams last year, right? The conference championship participants was they all know who they are. The Bills, they don't really have a run game, so they throw everything to Diggs. Diggs led the NFL in targets. They throw his way all the time. They are not afraid to do it, and he was fantastic. And they've got some young guys on defense, and they're trying to be speedy and fast. The Chiefs obviously know who they are. Tampa Bay kind of did some mid-season adjustments. They figured out, like, you know, maybe we need to find a happy medium between what Brady can do and what Arians wants. Also, their defense got healthier and better, and here they are in the Super Bowl, and they win the Super Bowl. All these teams knew who they were. Seattle feels stuck in between. It's like that person that someone used to date, and they want every person they date from then on to be that person. That's like some people with 2013. They look at 2013 and they're like, wow, 2013, we won a Super Bowl together. It was so special. It was so beautiful. And it's like, well, everyone changes. 2013 has moved on. They're gone. You've moved on. Stop trying to turn every new girlfriend or boyfriend you have into 2013. It's not going to happen again. You're not going to go into the fifth round and find a bunch of Hall of Famers again. That's so exceptionally rare. There's a reason that one of the first things people say when they mention Richard Sherman is, and a fifth rounder. Can you believe it? Because it's really, really crazy that he became as good as he was so quickly, and everyone except for Seattle missed it. Everyone except for Seattle. He didn't take a bunch of years to become good. He came in, he was good, and everyone was like, how did we not see this? That's why it's a story. You don't just find that easily. And those defensive players may not be able to play the way that they did in 2013 in today's NFL. Furthermore, you don't have Marshawn Lynch anymore. You don't have that offensive line anymore. And your quarterback is better. You've got to sharpen your identity. And I'll say two things about that. Number one, they've got the weapons on both sides of the ball to figure it out. They've got the weapons to be good. They got Bobby Wagner, Jamal Adams, good stuff on defense. They have Russell Wilson. They have Chris Carson. They've got two of the best receivers in the game. They have good stuff on both sides of the ball and enough pieces to really contend. Number two, even if it doesn't seem to, I think, either of us that they've really sharpened their offensive identity, identity is something that means a lot to Pete Carroll. And I mentioned this earlier in the show, that when he was in a random midweek press conference ahead of a game against the Rams in 2018, someone said, what do you make of Sean McVay's offense? And it was at a time when, like, Sean McVay, the hot new coach, oh my gosh, can you believe it? And the first compliment he gave wasn't necessarily about Todd Gurley. It wasn't about anything else. It was, he knows who he is. And I think to Pete Carroll, that's one of the most important things you can do. The most important things you can be is someone who knows who you are. And it is something he values in his program. And I know that it matters. I'm curious to see if they're able to do that this year, to figure it out, to know who they are with the pieces they have and not just the pieces that you idealize from years past.
Yeah, you nailed it on the head with that. And the problem with what happened last year is, I believe 2020, their offense, that was the direction that they need to go in to truly maximize Russell Wilson, to truly maximize the talent of this offensive skill group. Chris Carson, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Gerald Everett, you name it. I believe that is the road that they have to go down. The problem was, in my opinion, outside of a number of other things, Russell Wilson turning the ball over is one of them. But at the forefront of that, I believe it was the fact that you had an offensive coordinator, Brian Schottenheimer, who I thought did a lot of good things here in Seattle. This is not a knock on Brian Schottenheimer. It's just the truth that he was operating an offense that he wasn't comfortable with. An offense in a style that he was not familiar with, that was not part of his background. 2018, 2019 is what Brian Schottenheimer is and knows and is best at. And I believe that they found an offensive coordinator in Shane Waldron, coming from that Sean McVay tree, knowing an identity, knowing how to be explosive, knowing how to attack, knowing how to spread defenses out, and doing all those things, and doing it at a high level, and knowing the adjustments that are required throughout the season and throughout games. I think that that is the change, and that is why you're seeing what you're seeing. And that identity, Stacey, as is important to Pete Carroll, it's going to be vital to their success.
All right, you've got questions, we've got answers. Get your questions in right now for What I Need to Know. Seahawks, Mariners, anything, whatever it is, text it now to 710-710. That's 710-710. Mac and Jack's text line, What I Need to Know, coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
All right, it's What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating, Cooling, Electric. You send your questions in, any question you want, to the Mac and Jack's text line, 710-710. This is one of my favorite questions we've ever received, Jake. Ever, ever, ever. What I Need to Know, WIN2K, which sport has the best coaching rants? Yes, I have my answer ranked 3-2-1.
Man, which sport?
The correct answer is, in order from third to number one, the best, is baseball, especially old school baseball, would be number three, because sometimes it's weird. Two, NFL. One, college football. College football is the best rants, the best coaching rants.
Okay. Basketball has some pretty good ones.
Really
now.
Good ones.
I mean, you have some guys who just let it loose in some post game press conferences. But I'm going to go with football too. I think some of the more, you know, marquee, monumental post game pressers have come from football and college football. No doubt. No doubt about it. I mean, from anything, from anywhere from playoffs to, you know, they are who we thought they were. I'm a man. I'm 40.
I'm 40. That's like one of the, I mean, come on.
I mean, there's some all-timers.
I think also, like, there's a type of hype that you have to have, I would imagine, as a college football coach that for some reason sometimes breaks loose in press conferences. There's more coaches, and you're going to get just weirder moments. I don't know what it is. College football, best rants, weirdest rants.
Or like we had that college basketball coach from Portland State University who, you know, in his press conference, as you remember, Stacey, he was talking about how tough he is. He doesn't eat. He doesn't eat till lunch.
I drive without my AC on in the summer.
That's right. He drives without his AC in the summer. I mean, this guy's freaking tough, man.
He's tough. 206, what I need to know, what are you a secret fan of?
Secret fan of.
This could be like a guilty pleasure kind of thing.
Secret fan of. Oh, boy. This is tough because when you're talking about secret fan, I mean, we're talking about movies, we're talking about TV, we're talking about
food.
I am...
What do you not readily admit to people? Like, how many Creed albums are on your phone? Like, what is something that you don't, like, jump to tell people about yourself?
That I listen to Justin Bieber.
Wow,
that his new album, I really like his new album.
I will say, Jake told me this unprompted.
Yeah, but it's a safe space.
Oh, right. It's a safe space.
And, you know, this is a safe space where I'm not really talking to a whole lot of people out there, you know? So I feel like we have a very close, close group that I could admit things to. And, so I like Justin Bieber's new album.
There's nothing wrong with that. There you go.
There you go.
I haven't listened to it. There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, I mean, yeah. Okay. So what about you, Stacey?
Guilty pleasure. Mine would be just laziness, general laziness. Like, I think I like to unwind by doing absolutely nothing, and I feel a little bit of shame about that, but it's amazing.
Why?
And so,
why would you feel bad about that?
People try to make you feel like, oh, it's sunny, you should be outside, or like, oh, you should go do something, and it's like, but sometimes the way that I want to, like, enjoy my day is by doing nothing, and it is one of my favorite things to do, and I wouldn't go out, like, if I'm on a date and I'm getting to know someone and he's like, so what do you do for fun? I'm not going to be like, oh, I watch Forensic Files for 12 hours. No, I'm going to be like, oh, I go to, you know, restaurants with friends and go outside and I walk outside for sure. I definitely love
Or you're
outside.
Like everybody that's in the dating game that says that they're adventurous and they
hiking,
like to go outdoors and
camping.
I like this
people.
One from Christian, our boy Christian, 206. I'm a secret fan of dad hats, even though my head can't fit them. That's a tough dilemma. That's a really, really tough dilemma that you're in, Christian.
what I need to know, let's see, I just had one. Oh, someone, by the way, said it's baseball hands down. What are you talking about? What I need to know, do you think the defensive tackle position is solidified?
Solidified.
No, I don't.
I think you're pretty close, but it all depends on how you see this thing unfolding. Do you feel like you need to go out and acquire somebody else? I mean, the three technique defensive tackle position and that backup spot behind Puna Ford is really the area that I point to. And there's guys like Geno Atkins that are still out there. Plenty of guys like that at the defensive tackle spot. Or you have guys like LJ Collier, Rasheem Green, you have Kerry Hyder Jr., who have background of being both a five technique and a three technique defensive tackle. So they may feel like they have it solidified, but I think that there's one more move to be made at that position.
And I feel the same way. I'm just going to jump to the next question. What I need to know from Chris and Graham, is Shane Waldron's offense going to be able to get the plays out a lot quicker so we do not have a lot of games like we had in the last few years?
Delay of games. Yes, it will be so much faster, and you'll see the tempo of this offense.
I hope so.
Exponentially.
This offense is better when it's up-tempo.
I think Seahawks fans are going to be really, really excited about the tempo and the way that this offense operates. It's going to be a lot of fun.
All right.
A lot of fun.
It's been a fun one. Jake, you're you're back in the stew tomorrow, right? You're
in
studio?
I'm getting on a plane. I'm coming back to the Seattle just to be in studio with you guys. Let's do this on a Friday.
I think we're going to have a fun Friday show planned. I have some ideas up my sleeve you guys are going to like. It'll be fun.
Okay.
It'll be fun. All right. Do not go anywhere, though. Sports talk is obviously not done. Wyman and Bob coming on next right here on 710 ESPN Seattle.